So today we're reading from Shripad Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami's Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we have lots of verses to go from. It's difficult enough to speak from one verse. We have how many verses today? 10 verses. So we'll be reading from text number 144 until 144 to 154. So I just repeat, I recite the verses. There's actually a few small purports as well. So I recite those small purports. And then we'll have the main purport and the verse response on 154. So bear with me as we go through this.
Bhata kahe guru ragya heya balavana Guru Agya Nalangiya Shastra Pramana.
Sarabhaum Bhattacharya said, "The order of the spiritual master is very strong and cannot be disobeyed. That is the injunction of the Shastras, the revealed scriptures." Then there's a verse from the Raghuvamsh, which is a poem by Kalidas.
Sa shushravan matari bhargavena pitur niyogat prakritam dvishadvat pratyagrihit agraja shashanam tat agyana gurunam hya avicharaniya.
Being ordered by his father, Parushuram killed his mother, Renuka, just as if she were an enemy. When Lakshman, the younger brother of Lord Ramachandra, heard of this, he immediately engaged himself in the service of his elder brother and accepted his orders. The order of the spiritual master must be obeyed without consideration. Small purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Raghuvamsh, chapter 14, text 46. Lord Ramchandra's statement to Sita, given below, is from the Ramayana, Ayodhya Khand, chapter 22, verse number 9. So this is the verse that Lord Ram recited to Sita in the Valmiki Ramayana.
Nirvicharam gurur agya maya karya mahatmanaha shireyohya evam bhavatyascha mama jaiva visheshataha.
The order of a great personality like a father must be executed without consideration, because there is good fortune in such an order for both of us. In particular, there is good fortune for me. And now back to CC.
Tave Mahaprabhu Tanre Kaila Angikara Apana Shri Anga Sevaya Dila Adhikara.
After Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya said this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Govinda and engaged him in the service of his personal body.
Prabhur priya bhrityakari sabhe kare mana sakala vaishnavera Govinda kare samadhana.
Everyone respected Govinda as the dearest servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Govinda served all the Vaishnavas and saw to their needs.
Chota bara kirtaniya dui haridasa ramai nandai rahe govindera pasha.
Both Haridas senior and Haridas junior who were musicians as well as Ramai and Nandai used to stay with Govinda.
Govindera sanga kare prabhura sevana govindera bhagya sima Nayaya Varnana.
They all remained with Govinda to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, no one could estimate the good fortune of Govinda.
Aradine Mukunda Tata Kahe Praburastane Brahmananda Bharati Aila Tomara Darshane.
The next day, Mukunda Dutt informed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Brahmananda Bharati has come to see you.
Agya Deha Yadi Tane Aniya Etai Prabhu Kahe Guru Deha Yabe Tandra Thani.
Mukunda Dutt then asked the Lord, shall I bring him here? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Brahmananda Bharati is like my spiritual master. It is better that I go to him.
Etabali Mahaprabhu Bhaktagana Sanghe Chali Aila Brahmananda Bharatira Age.
After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees came into the presence of Brahmananda Bharati. And now, verse for today. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees approached him. They saw that he was covered with a deer skin. Seeing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very unhappy. Purport. Brahmananda Bharati belonged to the Shankara Sampradaya. The title Bharati indicates a member of one of that Sampradaya's 10 classes of sannyasis. It is customary for a person who has renounced the world to cover his body with a deer skin or the bark of a tree. This is enjoined by the Manu Samhita. But if a sannyasi who has renounced the world simply wears a deer skin and does not spiritually advance, he is bewildered by false prestige. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not like to see Brahmananda Bharati wearing a deer skin.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Tanyamano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamhayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sahagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathamitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sahavadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinavandhu Jagatpate Govesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Aurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchatarupatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyamevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, and good morning to today's class. So there is so much to speak throughout these 10 verses. Today, I won't be able to do justice to cover everything, but I have chosen 3 themes to cover today. The first theme is the absolutely amazing story of Mother Renuka. Okay? This is a personality who is not well known so much, even her husband, and obviously Parashuram, not so much information is told about him. So I would like to cover the story of Mama Renuka because it brings around so much understanding of Krishna's intent of the verse Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Dushkritam, where Krishna descends to protect his devotees and annihilate the miscreants. The second theme that I would like to cover, if we have time, is the reasons why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sad to see Brahmananda Bharati, who is just like his spiritual master, wearing a deer skin. And then the third, given that it's Easter Sunday, happy Easter, I will try to share with you a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and His Holiness Golok Nivasini, Shripad Kamalkrishna Maharaj. They discuss about their life after Easter, after the crucifixion. So the understanding is that people write history. So it is not always that historians are limited to the place where Jesus was born and he had his pastimes. There are other individuals who wrote about his story. Who wrote about his story after the crucifixion. And Prabhupada discusses this with Kamalkrishna Maharaj. So would you like to hear about that as well?
Yeah.
Because his life doesn't end after Easter, after the chocolate eggs. There's a little bit more. So if we get time, actually I recorded the conversation on my phone. I'll try to play it to see if it works. Otherwise I also have the text. Discussion of April 1977. Okay, so let's see how we go through. So the first verse that we read in 144, all of us know that in the 10 offences, offence number 4 is Gurur Avagya, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. This is from the Padma Purana. So we all understand how important this is. And primarily because the spiritual master is the representation of the Chaitanya Guru. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami explains that the Lord in the heart, he manifests in the form of the spiritual master. So if you do Guru Avagya, if you disobey the orders of the spiritual master, it is the same as committing an offense against Lord Krishna. There is so much more to discuss on this matter, but one of my favorite offenses is number 4. When I mean by favorite, because I see this done so much, actually. Shruti Shastra Nindanam. To blaspheme the Vedic literatures, or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. This is something which is very subtle, but my general observation is that if Srila Prabhupada did not comment on something, then be very careful. Because you never know that you may be breaching offense number 4. And this is a very important point, and it happens again and again and again, at least in my circles. So I try my best to ensure that this offense is not committed. Better to say, I don't have the answer, or I don't know. Because that way then you can be limited to your reality, and also avoid committing offenses. Whether it's discussing about the so-called limitation of the Vedic literatures, or whether it's criticizing other scriptures, because, for example, one is following the Western view on Vedic civilization, these things should not happen. They're very dangerous. And therefore, offense number 4 is very meaningful. Kalidas in the Raghuvamsh, he quotes this very long verse about Parushuram killing his mother, Renuka, just as if she were an enemy. When we hear such verses, I asked some devotees, what comes to your mind? And I would just tell you what they said. It was just a few devotees who I asked. Some of them said was the materialistic nature of a female. Some of them said the inferiority of a female. And others said the power of Parushuram. Jai Shri Radha Gokul Nanda ki Jai. Jai Shri Lakshman Hanuman ki Jai. Jai Shri Gaurinathai ki Jai. However, these immediate reactions when you come across this story are completely incorrect. This story actually has been written to glorify the power of woman. This story has been written to explain the importance of women. Renuka was born in Madhya Pradesh. She manifested from Agni by her father after performing a yajna, King Renu. Now Renuka was named Renuka because she was an atomic scientist. Very smart, very intellectual, and very clever. She was an atomic scientist, and therefore her name was Renuka. And you'll get one example on how clever and smart she was. Okay? She did something that no one's ever been able to do, even to this day. So we will come to that. There's just one example that I will give to demonstrate how smart and clever and advanced she was as a person. At the age of 8, she mastered the scriptures and she became very respectable in the academic community. It is said that the son of Jamadagni, he once upon a time came to the kingdom of King Renu. And when he saw Renuka, he asked her father for a hand in marriage. Jamadagni, actually it's a very long story which I won't get into, but he is the son of Maharishi Bhrigu. And Bhrigu, you will know, is the personality who can travel everywhere. And he also once ended up in Vaikuntha, where he kicked the chest of Narayana. It's a different story which we won't get into, so I hesitated. King Renu, with all awe and celebration, arranged the marriage of Jamadagni and Renuka. Renuka was very young when she got married. And from the moment of her marriage, all she did was serve her husband in assisting him in performing his Sandhya Vandanam, recitation of scriptures, seeing students, disciples in the house, cooking, feeding, and also answering questions. And on her daily routine, she would go to the Ganga, and her job was, her service was to bring water back to the ashram so Jamadagni can perform his tarpan, his achaman, and his ablutions. Now, during those days, this was a very long time ago. I will give you an example. This is how long the story was. Once upon a time, it was extremely sunny. And Jamadagni became very upset. So he shot several arrows at Surya in order to dissipate the heat. Surya appeared and said, please, you know, I'll be destroyed. I will do you a boon. I will give you something called an umbrella and something called sandals. So you all own umbrellas. The first umbrella was given by Surya to Jamadagni. And umbrellas then became popular on this planet, and sandals, so that we can protect ourselves from the heat. Of course, in Europe, it's also used for rain as well. So this is an example of how old this story was. Parashuram appeared in the 19th Mahayuga, Lord Ramchandra in the 24th, Lord Krishna in the 28th. So, and Parashuram is still around. Parashuram in the previous yugas, he was Kalki. And at the moment, he's waiting for Vishnu Yasha's son to be born in Sambhala, which is in Moradabad, India. And he will then initiate him and become his guru. And then Kalki will do what he has to do to end Kali Yuga. So Parashuram has been living for a very long time. And Jamadagni was his father. So can you imagine how long this story took place? So many years ago, many hundreds of thousands of years ago. So how would she now bring back this water? Here is an example of her atomic scientific ability. She would make a pot out of sand, and she would fill the pot of sand with water. And then she would grab a snake, and she would wrap it around her head, and then place the pot of sand with Ganga water upon her head. And every day she would go to the ashram to provide this water for Jamadagni. And there were many, many other inventions and creations that Renuka gave to the world. The concept of a pot, the concept of an umbrella, the concept of wearing sandals. There is a lot more to describe about her glories. But what you find is in the Vedic literatures, there are two powerful energies which always get disturbed as an indication for the Lord to descend to annihilate miscreants. The first is Gaumata, cow. And the second is women. These two energies, they're always implicated in the destruction of unrighteousness. So when we say about women, we immediately think of Draupadi, Yagyaseni, we think of Sita, we think of Shachimata, and in this situation, Renuka. So why was Renuka's head decapitated? After explaining so much about her importance and her glory, there are so many reasons for this. I will just cover one or two or three. But it's not what you're assuming. It is not because she was fallen and she committed a sin. And it's just another example of the problem that women create in life. It's none of that at all. It's the entire opposite. What did Draupadi do? What did Sita do? What did Renuka do in order to be treated the way they were by the most powerful evil people on this planet? Why did they sacrifice themselves for the higher good? Because they're powerful. They have the ability to do so. In Vedic culture, the feminine energy is known as Shakti. Why? Because that's where the power belongs. That's where the greatness belongs. Even in the Brahmavarta Puran, towards the end, when Krishna returned back to Vrindavan to meet his parents and Sri Radha, Vyasadeva explains that there was a conversation where they were reminiscing about Krishna's pastimes. And they said, Krishna, you do know, right, that the reason why you killed all those demons as a young boy was because Sri Radha manifested in your left hand. And through your left hand, all the demons were annihilated. Yeah? Your right hand was very weak. So Sri Radha came, because she is the Ardhangani on the left hand side. And she actually annihilated all the demons in Vrindavan. Krishna was the medium. It was Sri Radha doing so. And then, don't forget that when you picked up Govardhan Hill, you chose your left hand. Because I was there lifting up Govardhan Hill on your behalf. So there are so many intimate, beautiful exchanges between Radha and Krishna. But the point I want to make is that to understand the story correctly, you have to understand the tattva that's represented in the Vedic scriptures. So, Renuka and Jamadagni, they were living at a time where literally the whole planet was under the supervision of a great king whose name was Kartavirya Arjun. He was so powerful that he had, from benediction, he gained 1,000 arms. That's how powerful he was. Now, Kartavirya Arjun was actually not like Ravan, and he was also a contemporary of Ravan. They lived at the same time. Ravan was a sinner from beginning. Most of you may have read that and you will know that. But Kartavirya Arjun was not like that. He was a Danvir, he would give charity, he would help the Brahmins, but power and fame got to his head. And he then began to become unrighteous. Now, when Kartavirya Arjun became unrighteous, the general public started to break the day-to-day values, morals, and ethics of human society. And one example in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that even Chitrangada, the king of the Gandharvas, even he was free to roam around naked in sacred pools of water, enjoying with the apsaras and celestials. As you know, that in the Vedic culture, there are so many rules and regulations. Now, what is very, very important to note, it is not possible to understand all of the rules and regulations by yourself, by your readings. This is why there is a parampara. Because one's father, one's mother, one's grandfather, one's grandmother, and then great-grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers and uncles and aunts, they're all following the Vedic culture. And it's a combination of all of their readings that children inherit. That is how you learn things. You don't learn culture by reading a book. It will be limited. For example, many people, I'll give you a practical example. Many people, when they drive to the temple, they try to bring their car as close as possible to the entrance. Right? This is true. Did you know that by doing so, one destroys their piety that they're going to accumulate to visit the Krishna in the temple? Because it's not allowed, actually. Driving to the temple by a vehicle is actually not recommended. It destroys your piety. Therefore, practically, how do you do this? You park at a distance. Maybe in the field. Okay. You can leave the space here for the devotees. Yeah. You park in the field and you walk as much as you can to the temple. That way you don't destroy your piety. So you may think, actually it's the opposite. I am conveniencing myself so I can go for darshan very quickly. But actually the scripture is saying something else. The scripture is saying that you must have some austerity walking to the temple. Otherwise, the purpose of coming to the temple has already been destroyed before you've come. So there are a lot of minor, small little things that when parents, family, communities, generations share with their children, they're able to actually make advancement. Otherwise, you keep going back and forward, back and forward. Now, Kartavirya Arjun, because he was the king of the entire planet, him becoming unrighteous started to give people the impetus to also follow irreligious principles. And therefore, Jamadagni and Renuka, in the same way that Sita and Ram, in the same way as the Pandavas and Draupadi, in the same way as Shachimata. I say Shachimata because some of you may have read on how hurt she was when Mahaprabhu departed and took sannyas. We won't have time to go through that at all, and I'm sure somebody else will cover it in the future. Similarly, Jamadagni and Renuka, they had to perform some activities by which people will recognize how bad the condition of the planet has become. And sometimes these activities are very, very gross. For example, in the Mahabharata, Vyasadeva chose to speak and include the very unfortunate disrobing of Draupadi. Now remember, Draupadi's other name is Krishna. Because actually, she's intimately related to Lord Krishna. Therefore, it is not the etiquette to speak about very irreligious activities that impact devotees of Krishna. But Vyasadeva chose to speak about Draupadi's disrobing. It's a very horrific scene if you read it from the Mahabharata. And for those who believe it's not there, it is because it's a book of 100,000 verses, and my dear friend, you probably haven't had time to go through 100,000 verses, given that the Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses, and people struggle to read the Bhagavatam. Okay. What generally happens in good culture is that you first read the entire book, then you quote from it. What happens now is you don't read the book, and you quote from it. Okay? So Prabhupada's books, it's very important to read back to front. Otherwise, we actually become cheaters because you don't actually know the context of the entire book. It's just another part I wanted to share. So, in order to demonstrate and evidence how bad society had got, once one Renuka had collected water in the pot of sand, as she was going back to the ashram, she saw the king of the Gandharvas bathing naked in the sacred rivers, which itself is an offense because water represents Varun. It's a personification of a celestial. And therefore, one has to be very respectful when you bathe. And he was sporting in it. My work allows me to travel quite a lot. And only recently, I had the fortune of visiting Mayapur and Vrindavan back to back. If some of you have done that, you'll know how beautiful it is. And two of the highlights of my visit recently was to go to the Janmasthan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and touch those sweet little feet of his under the tree, the neem tree. And then literally 2 days later, to go to Mathura and touch that sacred slab upon which Lord Sri Krishna appeared. I also went to Radhakund, and things have changed now. They let you bathe. So Radhakund, Shyamakund, Radhakund. But while I was bathing, there was a local person who started to swim in Radhakund. I was thinking, oh God, the pandas are not going to like this. And immediately the pandas are like, no, stop swimming. So even swimming in sacred waters is not permissible because it is an activity of devotion. It's a religious activity, bathing. So when this happened, Renuka, she paused. And as she paused, she saw this irreligious activity taking place. Now many scriptures say so many things, and they say different things, okay? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it basically says that the word in the 9th canto, 16th chapter, verse number 3, the word used is kinchit. It's kinchit, which means very little. Renuka, very, very tiny, 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 tiny bit, became inclined to, I don't know how to say this, but she was inclined to the activity that was going on. And her mind deviated from her chastity. Okay? Other scriptures, like the Brahmanda Puran, the Mahabharata, and one other text, it talks about, I think it's gone off, it talks about her spending more time than was required in walking past. So there are different types of understandings of what took place at that point. But let us at least accept that the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Prabhupada translate, she was somewhat inclined toward him and failed to remember that the time for the fire sacrifice was passing. Okay, so at least this is what the Bhagavatam says. Now, at that point, the water began to come out of the pot of sand because the chastity was then being impacted. And she realized that the time for the Homa Vela, the time for the Homa was also passing. So Renuka, with her head down, she returned back to the ashram. And when she did that, Yamadagni saw there's no water in the pot. So she placed the pot of water in front of him and stood down with her head. You know, her service was impacted by being disturbed on the way. Now Yamadagni did something. Okay? But before I explain what he did, I have to tell you another story. In Vedic literatures, there's a story in a story, and in a story is another story. Okay, but try to bear with me, because it's very important that all of these elements are understood. Yamadagni, once, while performing worship, he had a kamadenu, a cow which gave sacred milk. And at that time, Dharma, personified, was walking around. He saw that Yamadagni had milked the cow and placed the sacred ambrosia milk in a pot. Dharma decided to enter that pot of milk and transform himself as anger. Because remember, this was a very long time ago. All the concepts that we mentioned earlier were new to the planets. And he entered into the pot of milk as anger to see whether or not Yamadagni's tapasya will get broken and shattered. Yamadagni, unknowingly, that Dharma, who had converted into anger, entered into the pot of milk, drank the pot of milk. And Dharma was waiting to see if Yamadagni becomes impacted by this sin that's entered the milk. You know, a bit like the sin of the apple, given that it's Easter. Nothing happened. Yamadagni had the milk. And he had more, because it was so tasty, and nothing happened to him. Dharma immediately manifested in front of Yamadagni and said to Yamadagni, "How comes you are not impacted? My son, I give you the boon. That in life, kama esha krodha esha, rajogun samudbhava, that anger and lust arise from passion, and krodha bhavati sammoha, Sabmoha Smriti Vibramaha, that growth is the beginning of destruction. However, in your life, I bless you that every time you become angry, it will be a blessing. Something good will come out." So when Yamadagni saw that Renuka had returned late, there was no water for the Abhyukshana Patra Stapana, for the establishment of the sacred water pot from which the sacred lines are drawn, and water is offered to Agni as part of the consecration rites, he became furious. He became angry. And he shouted at his wife. And in his meditation, he felt to himself that her chastity has been compromised, and therefore she was late. And for that reason, I am now unable to perform my homa. Immediately, Renuka, she left that place, she took the shelter of saints and devotees, and she started meditating. Every day, she would collect rice, and from one half of the rice, she would give it to devotees to eat, and from whatever was left, she would consume. She'd done this fast for 3 days, and the devotees and the saints said to her that having performed this tapasya away from your husband, hopefully, when you return back, his anger has calmed and he accepts you. Think about the story of Sita and Ram in this regard. And all is well. However, there is a chance that you may have to go through difficulty for a short period for a higher good. And the same thing happened to Draupadi and Sita. You understand the point that I'm trying to make? This story is not what you think it is. This story doesn't explain about the unglorious nature of Renuka. It doesn't talk about, it talks about the opposite of this. So Renuka, she then returned back to the ashram, and unfortunately Yamadagni's anger was still with him. Why? Because something good is meant to happen. He immediately told his sons, "I would like you to chop off the head of Renuka. Why did he say this? Him and his wife arranged this entire scene for the destruction of Kartavirya Arjun and his sons, so that Dharma could be re-established. And this is why Jamadagni asked his sons to decapitate Renuka, because he needed somebody who is going to be up for the job of Vinashaya Chatushkitam. Somebody who doesn't disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Somebody who is fully dedicated, who is strong enough and powerful enough to carry out this very difficult task. Even Arjun was asked by Lord Krishna on the eve of the battle to meditate and worship Durga in order to be successful in the war. Some of you may know this. His four sons all immediately declined. They were not up for this job. However, Parushuram, when he was asked, him being the youngest son, there was no expectation at all for Parushuram to follow his father's order. But Parushuram agreed. And why did he agree? Because he knew that his father was very, very powerful. And he knew that something from here will come, which is to serve the purpose of God. Remember, Jamadagni and Renuka are not just an ordinary man and woman. We described already some of their characteristics. They are not to be compared to humans. In fact, they were non-humans living in Mahishmati, which is Madhya Pradesh at that time. Parushuram, he immediately, knowing the power of Jamadagni, used his axe that was given to him after worshipping Shiva and Parvati, and killed his four brothers and his mother. I will tell you in a moment. At this point, Jamadagni had gained his wishes. He had found somebody that is now going to perform the service to eradicate irreligious principles and establish Dharma, because Parushuram had shown full faith, full power. He had demonstrated his ability. The entire episode of Renuka and Jamadagni is now coming to its conclusion. Jamadagni immediately said to Parushuram, "I am so pleased with your service. Please ask for a benediction." And Parushuram replied, "Jivitam jasmitam badhe." Let my mother and my brothers immediately at this very second come back to life and not remember the fact that I had killed them. Jamadagni said tathastu. Renuka and the four brothers immediately came back to life as if they had just woken up from sleep. But after this happened, Parushuram went off to do some tapasya, and at that point, Kartavirya Arjun's sons came and separated the head of Jamadagni, because Parushuram had killed Kartavirya Arjun. Renuka, she beat her chest 21 times, and Parushuram then received the instruction from that beating of 21 times, that he is to annihilate the Kshatriyas across the planet so that he can re-establish Dharma. And Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this in Canto 9 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and you can read about this in more detail if you would like to. Parushuram, after annihilating the sons of Kartavirya Arjun, it is said that he piled heads and heads and heads in order to establish Brahmanical principles, as mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in this particular canto and chapter. He also, with the blood of the Kshatriyas, he established Samanta Panchaka, which became Kurukshetra. And Kurukshetra
was then used as the battlefield of the Mahabharata. So these are all interconnected because they are all having the attribute of establishing dharma. In this very same verse that we discussed, Kaviraj Goswami, he quotes from the conversation of Lord Ram and Sita. There is also a view in the scriptures where the Guru's orders can be disobeyed. And one example is when Lakshman is talking to Ram about exile, and he mentions to Ram that I don't agree that Dashrath's order for you to go into exile is correct. And some of you will know that Lakshman had actually offered to kill Dashrath and Bharat and Shatrughna and re-establish Lord Ram's coronation. He actually mentions that Guru Apyabaliptasya Karya Akarya Janataha. When a guru follows unrighteous paths and is filled with pride and arrogance and does not know how to discriminate between good and bad, such a guru deserves to be disciplined. So there is a whole other episode of talking about this secondary aspect as well, which we won't get into now. But Lakshmi is an example of quoting this verse. Kaushalya actually said to Lord Ram that in the way that Dashrath is your guru, I am also your guru. And she actually said, Tvam naham anujanami. I do not want you to go to exile. And Lord Ram disobeyed his first guru's order to go into exile, Kaushalya. So there are also examples where to uphold righteousness, personalities of Godhead have also gone across the general realms of dharma to re-establish a higher purpose. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read that Brahmananda Bharati, he appeared in deer skin. And Srila Prabhupada quotes the Manu Samhita in this regards. In the Manu Samhita, the deer skin is actually attributed to the Brahmachari initiation. So when a child of the upper varnas, of the Brahman, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, receive Upanayanam, at that point actually they're given the skin of a deer. And why is this? Some of you, I know, would understand that when you perform yogic practices, you mustn't sit without any asana, because of the way the energies emanate from Bhumimata into one's personality and one's meditation. There's a whole yogic philosophy around this. And for this reason, asanas or cloth are required. Because some of you will know that in Vedic culture, there is also the application of being a Digambara. Digambara means where you are without clothes as well. So why particular deer? It is said that actually there are certain types of clothing and skin types that people were offered during those days. For example, wearing a deer skin increases knowledge. Wearing a tiger skin gives you the fosters liberation. Wood, all benedictions. Kusha grass, longevity. Silk, health. And a wooden plank represents nishkamya karma, or activities which are unmotivated by desires or rewards. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of these, his asana was made from a wooden plank. Why? Because he was on the path of unconditional bhakti. These other skins are on the path of different yogic practices. And therefore, individuals, obviously, of a junior mentality, of a junior level of spiritual advancement. And it was this asana made of wood that when Sanatana Goswami wrote to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the various places of pastimes that had become excavated, the various books that Rupa and Jiva and Raghunath Das Goswami had written, when that letter arrived in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the last line of it was that the son of Vyankata Bhatta had arrived. Gopala Bhatta Goswami, at the age of 10, He served Markable for 4 months. For 4 months. And at the age of 30 is when he went to Vrindavan on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gauranga Mahaprabhu was so happy that Gopala had entered Vrindavan and is now associating with Rupa Sanatana and Jiva Goswami that he sent his own wooden asana, as described in this verse. And he asked Sanatana Goswami through the letter, "Give my wooden asana to Gopal Bhatta Goswami." And some of you will know that together with his asana, Mahaprabhu had 2 pieces of cloth. The sannyas cloth that he was wearing and 1 spare cloth of sannyas, which he would wear when the other one was being washed. His second set, he also gave with a wooden asana. And he said, "You give this to Gopal Bhatta Goswami." There was a whole procession. There was a whole huge celebration and ceremony where the Goswamis of Vrindavan, headed by Sanatan, carried the wooden asana of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his kopin, his dodi, or the string that ties the kopin, and his bahirvesh, the outer sannyas cloth. And they brought this to Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who then received it on his head. And the whole debate took place. Are these items to be worshipped, or are these items to be accepted by Gopal Bhatta? Gopal Bhatta said, they're to be worshipped. Sanatan said, no, they're to be accepted. And then Gopal Bhatta Goswami, with great sadness and great humility, he then accepted the sannyas cloth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and put it on. And then he was asked to sit on the wooden asana of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you can read more about this in the Bhakti Ratnakar. And to this day, this wooden asana has an abhishek of Yamuna water every morning. And it's been 500 years and it hasn't decayed. I've seen it myself. And some of you may have seen this as well. Similarly, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Brahmananda Bharati with the deer skin, he did not approve of this. Because he treated him like a spiritual master. And when Brahmananda Bharati, actually you would hear this next week, when he realized that Mahaprabhu doesn't approve of this cloth, because Mahaprabhu, he said, "I can't see him." He's standing right in front of him. He said, "I can't see him." At that point, Brahmananda Bharati realized that his cloth that he's wearing, the deer skin, is inappropriate. He should be on the path of unconditional bhakti. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated to his servants to give him sannyas cloth. And then Brahmananda Bharati, just like Gopal Bhatta Goswami, took off his deer skin and he put on the sannyas cloth. And then Mahaprabhu received him as his spiritual master. Prabhupada, my final point, Prabhupada explains that Bharati is one of 10 names of sannyasis. There are 2 types of names that a sannyasi receives. The first indicates his attainment of supreme bliss. The second half of the name is harmony with the infinite vastness of the universe. And therefore there is the concept of the Dashanami sannyasis. Prabhupada explains that the 10 names are Giri, mountain; Puri, tract; Bharati, land; Vana, forest; Sagar, ocean; Ashram, as we know what the ashram is; Saraswati, wisdom; Tirtha, pilgrimage; Parvata, hill. So these are the 10 suffixes of a sannyas name, of which one of those were Bharati. And actually this custom is followed by both Advaitins as well as Dvaitavad sannyasis too. It is a part of Vedic culture. We have run out of time, so I don't think I want to keep you any longer. But in essence, the story of Renuka and Jamadagni, which I tried to cover in as much detail as possible, demonstrates the importance of the pastime to facilitate Parashuram in annihilating the miscreants. We discussed briefly about the purpose of Brahmananda Bharati's wearing the deer skin and why Mahaprabhu disapproved. Firstly, it's for brahmacharis. Secondly, it's for yogis. He deserves to be of a different level. And we also discussed very briefly about the role of this in Gaudiya Goswami's life as well. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions, comments that anybody would like to ask or make? We have about 5 minutes.
Hare Krishna.
Just began. Thank you so much, Sri Radha. It was such a lovely and informative class. About the instructions about not to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. So we, in modern times now, we have a spiritual master, but unfortunately, sometimes they may certainly ask you a certain duty or certain commitment that you must follow or ask your the spiritual master as his disciple. For instance, okay, I want you to go to Russia and start preaching. I want you to go to China and start preaching or some other sort of country. But it may not be practical for you because of your time, place, circumstances, family. So in that situation, how would you speak to your spiritual master?
It's a difficult question. Would you like to answer, Babaji? Would you like to answer? Share something. If the spiritual master gives you an order which is very difficult according to one's circumstances, then how should one deal with that? Is that right?
Yeah.
Quick follow?
I think the first thing is one should ask for the forgiveness from spiritual master. If you can't follow his instruction or something like that.
Try something.
I just remembered like Prabhupada, he said it took him, I don't know, 40 years before he could follow instructions to his guru. So, but it was on his mind, how can I do it, how can I do it? So just by this, you are not, most of us, immediately, especially difficult instructions to follow immediately, but we meditate and we try to find a way, and then time will come that things will happen. That's all that I can say. At some point it will happen. I mean, I don't follow, I have to admit. But I'm meditating on it. You know, at some point, maybe Krishna will help. But something like that.
Thank you, Prabhuji. My only input would be that, practically speaking, sometimes the spiritual master may not know the individual so well. This happens a lot nowadays because of the good development and elevation of Krishna consciousness. It is not always possible. So even yesterday, His Grace Nilamada Prabhu was asked a similar question. And my understanding from Prabhuji's response was that one should develop many, many Siksha Gurus. Many Siksha Gurus who are peers, who are similar generations, maybe next generation above, with whom you can have a daily connection and understanding with. And these Siksha Gurus sometimes will be actually in a better position to give you regular guidance, regular mentoring, regular advice. And then obviously at that situation, that then becomes an order of Krishna in your life. So with my humble self, being here for nearly 30 years, I've had the greatest opportunities of having Siksha Gurus like Nilamada Prabhu, like Shruti Dhamma Prabhu, like Pranabandha Prabhu, like Gadada Prabhu, and so many other devotees, Gauri Prabhu, so many, Mava Kalangana. So in my own little life, I actually gain more advice from my local Bhaktivedanta Manor Siksha Gurus than maybe my own Diksha spiritual master, because sometimes you don't even see that person for a year or two, yeah, depending on your own circumstances. So I don't think I've answered your question, Prabhuji, but what I would say is that One should approach Siksha Gurus who are local and they know you very well. Kirt Mayakabu, obviously I forgot to mention his name. And actually you'll find that you can have a better conversation with such individuals when they give you instructions that maybe you have difficulty in following. And then there can be some adjustment as well. But sometimes, obviously, the spiritual master is also close to you in terms of your Diksha Guru, then that's also a great benefit to have. But the main thing is, there should be a two-way conversation, where possible. And if you cannot have a two-way conversation, best not to receive instructions. That is my suggestion. Best to receive instructions from devotees to whom you can have a reciprocal conversation. Which is why in Sanskrit, it's the only language that has a dual. You have single, dual and plural. Sanskrit has a dual. Because it's all about a relationship where two people should speak. God, the devotee, the spiritual master, the disciple. You know? So there's a whole big culture around this. But in your situation, your spiritual master is my own spiritual master, Bhakti Charaswami. And when I was in Mayapur a few weeks ago, I embraced his samadhi. Because I knew that every time Maharaj sees me, he would embrace me. And the devotees were looking at me thinking, this is a bit odd. You know, I'm from Britain, we do unconventional things, so no big deal. But Bhakti Charaswami, of course, he was somebody who, in my example, when he would give an instruction, he would call you, he would turn up at your house, he would ask other devotees, he was really engaged with instruction. So you're very blessed to have somebody like Sripad Bhakti Charaswami giving instructions. Is that okay, Krishna Govind?
Thank you, Sala.
Any other comments anybody would like to make? Prabhuji, please. Your question will be difficult for me to answer.
I was always, I can say, I felt dislike. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted sannyasa within Mayavadi line. And then I'm just wondering, in this line of these sannyasis, gurus of guru, were they ever affected by Mayavad philosophy, and then in which way, and then how that, for example, disciples and in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that means eventually they disobeyed the path of their guru, and then who was initial guru of this parampara? Yeah. Was he Mayavadi?
Absolutely.
And how is that?
Yeah, this is a really good question. If you're getting late for breakfast, you can obviously exit, but I'll try to explain very quickly. You see, in the same way that Kartivirya Arjun and his sons were destroyed by Parashuram, there was a time in the Itihas where all Vedic culture had got destroyed. And the person that came to slowly re-establish Vedic culture was Adi Shankara. Bhagavat Pad Adi Shankara. And Adi Shankara did the most amazing job you could ever imagine. Sometimes we talk of Mayavad philosophy, it is the philosophy against which we have a problem with. But the individuals themselves, Adi Shankara, if he had not appeared on earth and if he had not come to India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never have descended. And I will explain why. In the Puranas it describes that Adi Shankara, he sowed the beach of the evolution of theism in India. Because Buddhism had come and completely eradicated the existence of God. They completely destroyed all Vedic scriptures. There was nobody following this practically. So Adi Shankara, he initiated the evolution of theism in India. How is this? By bringing people at least to the acceptance that the Vedas are an authority. He had to do it very slowly. We are so we are so lucky that we have the philosophy of today. Because at those days, even to accept Veda as Shabda Praman was not followed by people. So Adi Shankara, he brought in a philosophy that started to attract people to accept the Vedic scriptures. However, to Prabhuji's question, what's very important to note, that Adi Shankara himself has indicated in, for example, the prayers of Bhaja Govindam, on how he recognizes, even Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavad Gita, the Sharirik Bhashya mentions, Narayana Paro Vyakhyat, that Narayana is beyond the Supreme Brahman. So we can actually see that Adi Shankara, in his own personal life, he acknowledged and understood the importance of Lord Shri Krishna being the origin of Godhead. However, his philosophy did not align with his internal thoughts because he was beginning the evolution of theism in India. So his followers were obviously following the Mayavad or the Brahmavad philosophy. And at that point, at least in India, you will find that for, at that time it was 500, now it's been 1,000 years of an unbroken parampara. At that time, 500 years had passed of the Shankara parampara, and the whole of India was infiltrated with sannyas after sannyas, like in Banaras. How many sannyasis were there? 10,000? Was it 10,000? When Mahaprabhu went to Banaras and met Prakashan and Saraswati? 10,000 sannyasis, imagine that in one room. Huh? So it was infiltrated. So Mahaprabhu, he saw that this is the best place to spread Krishna consciousness. Because there are 10,000 sannyasis. So Mahaprabhu then went to Banaras, sat in the place where we actually have the original painting at home. If you want to come and see, let me know. The original painting that was done by Karma Devi of Mahaprabhu sitting in the place where the sannyasis would wash their feet, the Pada Praksharanam area. And Mahaprabhu sat there and Prakashan and saw, he looks like Narayan. There were millions of suns oozing from his body. He held his hand, brought him over. And then Mahaprabhu said to him, the reason why I'm dancing and chanting is because my spiritual master thought I am a... Exactly. You said it, I didn't say it. And therefore, he taught me just one thing, Harinam Eva Kevalam, to chant Krishna's name. And then the Mayavadi sannyasis disobeyed Adi Shankara's teachings and accepted the inner ecstasy of Adi Shankara to become devotees of Krishna. So like that, Prabhuji, you can see. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, Mataji. Oh, Prabhuji, please. After you, please.
Hare Krishna. First I wanted to say the Jai Prabhupada and Jai Bhakti Charu Swami for raising you so amazingly, that you chose joyfully saying the Shastra so beautifully. That's, thank you. Secondary, I wanted to say that you mentioned it, and it's such an amazing story about, you know, this lady. Like yesterday I was thinking about how wonderful actually woman position is. If you really think about it, for years I used to hate myself for being woman, yeah? And for what a fortunate man, they can go serve gurus so easily, travel with them, blah, blah. You know, and then now I realize women can cry and women can run. Guys can't do that, okay? It's so much easier for girls because the ego is not there, yeah? And you mentioned it just now, and this was such a amazing connection that you just embraced samadhi of your spiritual master. You know, you didn't care, you know? Man, boys, you know, whoever it is, you just embraced it. And that's, I congratulate you on that, you know, because it means you reached the stage of girly, you know, gopi style, you know. So brilliant, brilliant.
Probably got banned.
you're not going to get banned.
Thank you so much for your comments. It's very important, cooperation between, Krishna says in the Gita, cooperation between man and woman, animals, earth, nature. When all of this is done, Krishna gets pleased. We all are born, we have certain qualities, certain bodies. But when all of those are engaged in Krishna consciousness, then actually everyone becomes happy. So everyone is equal in the eyes of God. And everyone is sacred because of the presence of the soul that Krishna himself manifests as eternally. Yes. Prabhuji, please enlighten us.
I don't know about enlightenment, but an example of involving Mother Kalangana in those early days when I came here, and she was guiding me so much in many ways, and at that time she was insisting I get a spiritual master, because ladies, I asked her once, will you be my spiritual master? I know it's not done. She said, I'm just a conditioned soul like you, and she punched me in the arm. I presented, and then my present spiritual master, I say present, because my Mother Kalangan is not here to give me instruction. But the one thing that was a dilemma to me, and I, Shruti Dham, took us both together. And I said to Shruti Dham how I was attracted so much to Bhaktivedanta's narrations and attractive. I felt he's very, very special. And I actually went to him and said, to Bhaktivedanta Goswami, he was a sannyas, but he wasn't taking disciples at that time. But it was a dilemma with me. My Mother Kalangan insisted I get a spiritual master. It doesn't matter if they fall down. You'll just get reconnected then, again and again, until you find that somehow or other you establish the link with the disciplic succession. She said that was most important. Prabhupada always said that. And what I did, but I got to know Bhaktivedanta Goswami in his times here, and I mentioned to Shruti about how attracted I am to him, and I'm wondering if he would maybe help me in my dilemma, with Mother Kalangana. So I felt, I was attracted to both parties, Mother Kalangana and Bhaktivedanta Goswami, very strongly. And so, and that my Bhaktivedanta Goswami wasn't even a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And so I remember at my initiation there, he said to me, I said to him that I would be, I would, I, you know, like Shruti, he said, I'm trying to clarify it in my own head actually. My spiritual master said to me at my initiation, what instructions do, I promised to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions and everything. And he said, yes, but it's conditional that you follow Mother Kalangana your main Siksha Guru, because I may not be present all the time. So he said so he reminded me that actually, and he said, and he said it to me, he said he respected, and that he felt, this is back to the Yadav Swami, that actually she was my real spiritual master. It was a strange situation. So in many ways, the Lord sort of satisfied it, but also in the humility of when Shruti Dharma brought myself and Mother Kalangana together with Bhaktivedanta Goswami. And it was arranged that he said when we both went in to meet Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Shruti, as a neutral agent, he said, "Okay, there is dilemma here. He would like to Peter, as I was called then, that he would like to take you on as his spiritual master. And Bhaktivedanta Goswami said, you know, as we came in, actually, he says, how can I serve you both? So he'd been talking to Shruti Dharma about this, and he brought us together, and the first thing that convinced me of Bhaktivedanta Goswami's qualification, that he says, how may I serve you both? In other words, it satisfied my necessary Shiksha Guru, Mother Kalangana, as my priority, and that if there's any dilemma, I must go to her. And it was a strange thing. And of course, even after many things happened, I was causing offences, so I lost my credibility as a devotee because of offences, and was taken out of my service. So, but what still was relevant was that since that time, my spiritual master has taken me through my own crisis. And I'm continually quoting from both, you know, all the time. I'm not unchaste at all to following his instructions, but because he was so forgiving of my offences to others also, that Mother Kalangana could, and I still refer to her many, many times without feeling unchaste to my present spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Goswami. You just got to hang in there until solution comes. And people hear me now, I quote often from Mother Kalangana, but also I quote from Bhaktivedanta and his teachings now, they reinforce Prabhupada as our leader, that we must follow Prabhupada. So I don't know if it was a necessary period of time when I also had difficulties in following my spiritual master.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Grateful. I'm sorry we couldn't cover this story about post-Easter, but maybe next time. Okay, I don't want to keep you waiting any longer. Thank you so much for your patience and tolerating my attempts to talk of Baba Renuka's story. But there is a benediction that you will all succeed in your personal challenges, in your spiritual life, for anyone who has the story of Baba Renuka. That is why I shared that today. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.